The Progressive Commentary Hour with Gary Null, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Gary Nolan, I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today on the Progressive Commentary Hour, we're going to examine the many issues involving genetically modified organisms. Currently, the United States government is strongly supportive of GMOs. The USDA, the FDA, the White House, individuals who've been brought in to oversee this, including Michael Taylor, one-time attorney at Monsanto, then one of the top people at the FDA, then back to Monsanto, then back at the FDA. In fact, overseeing our food safety as we speak. Here are the questions we're going to explore. We're going to ask just four basic questions. Are GMOs safe? Are they effective in such a way that they would provide us with something unique and different that distinguishes them from any other form of traditionally grown crop? If so, what are those benefits? Then the other two questions, are GMOs not safe? And do they not provide us with something that is unique enough that if they are in any way suspect of being dangerous, does it warrant this benefit-risk ratio where the benefit is to the manufacturer, the risk is to the public? Four simple questions. I've reviewed more than 200 articles on genetically engineered organisms, including the work on seeds, the work of those seeds being planted in India, the consequences to the people living in India who relied upon the word of the company selling those seeds, the work that's being done on Terminator seeds. These are suicide seeds, meaning they can only be planted once. What does that mean when you're in a country like Africa where you do what has been historically done? You grow a plant. You dry a certain amount of the plants, you take out their seeds, and you store those for the next season. Well, with some of these plants, you can't do that. And also, you can't afford to buy new plants, especially in this world we live in with many people at below subsistence levels. These are legitimate questions that are not being addressed in the mainstream media, nor are they on anyone talking points in the debate of the Democrats or Republicans, and that's why we're raising them. Our panel tonight will consist of Jeffrey Smith. He is one of the foremost experts on the health and environmental risks of genetically modified organisms, commonly known as GMO crops and foods. He is a leading watchdog person over corporate agricultural industry's manipulation of GMO genetic science and public opinion. He is currently the founding director of the Institute for Responsible Technology, a research and corporate watchdog organization devoted to informing the public about the truth of GMO foods and technologies. Also, director of the Campaign for Healthier Eating in America. And he is the author of several books, including Seeds of Deception and Genetic Roulette, which have become international bestsellers for critiquing GMO science and industry. Then we have Dr. Michael Hansen. Dr. Hansen, Ph.D., is a senior scientist focusing on food safety for the Policy and Advocacy Division of the Consumers Union, the publishers of Consumer Reports. He also represents Consumers International, a coalition of 250 organizations in 110 countries at the Codex Alimentarius Commission, representing the concerns of GMOs, antibiotics in animal feed, and agricultural pest management such as pesticides. He has served on the USDA Advisory Committee on Agricultural Biotechnology from 1998 to 2002. Now, he's published numerous articles and authored a major text on the potential health risks of pharmaceutical rice to consumers and the environment. And finally is Dr. Shiv Chopra. He is, for the past 40 years, Dr. Chopra has battled the Canadian Health Ministry and its affiliate organizations to protect the world's food supply. His research exposing the dangers of bovine growth hormone resulted in BGH being barred from Canada and the European Union. He is the author of numerous publications and received prized awards such as the Fellowship Award of the World Health Organization. Dr. Chopra has higher degrees in veterinary medicine and microbiology. In addition to being a world leader in voicing opinion to the opposition to genetically modified science, he is also a religious scholar and an international social activist. His latest book is Corrupt to the Core, which details the many ways that government corrupts and endangers the public food supply. And they are all here with us today. Let us also state that repeatedly we have invited members of Monsanto and DuPont and some of the other companies to come forward and share their points of view. Anyone who's ever heard any of these discussions knows that I always stay neutral on these issues myself when we have people with competing ideas and allow them an opportunity in a civil way to present their arguments. However, they have chosen not to participate, which is their right, but it does not stop the discussion. We're going to open our discussion first by saying, since all three of you are on the line at the same time, thank you all very much for joining us.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you. And hello, Michael. Hello, Jeffrey. Good to meet you again. Across the waves, except we are all on the same side. We are all disappointed. I certainly am, that neither Michael Taylor, nor Monsanto, nor any other company, nor the government, nor the FDA, nor Health Canada would come and they work in secret ways, and they don't want to come and debate matters.
Well, they certainly have that opportunity, not only in the past, but any time in the future. We hold that forum open to them. We're going to begin by asking Jeffrey Smith, and then we're going to go to Dr. Hansen and then to Dr. Chopra. Jeffrey Smith, please, for those people in this audience, and this is a worldwide audience, tell us about genetically engineered foods, the history of them, and the fact that we have not had enough open debate between the experts of why it is a good thing or not a good thing.
Thank you, Gary. Yes, the genetically modified organisms are those where you take genes, typically from other species like bacteria and viruses, and force them into the DNA of crops like soybeans and corn. You can also genetically engineer animals and even humans. Now, in 1992, the FDA policy stated that the agency was not aware of any information showing that the foods created from genetic engineering were significantly different. And on the basis of that sentence, they said absolutely no testing was necessary, no labeling was necessary. In fact, companies like Monsanto, who told us that PCBs, Agent Orange, and DDT were safe, can determine on their own whether their genetically modified foods were safe, put them on the market without even telling the FDA or consumers. Documents made public from a lawsuit in 1998 showed that the policy was based on a lie. In fact, the overwhelming consensus among the scientists working at the FDA were that genetically modified foods were not only different, but actually inherently unsafe, in that they could create hard-to-detect allergens, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. They urged their superiors to require long-term study, but were ignored. The person in charge of policy, as you said, was Monsanto's former attorney, later their vice president. In 2009, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine actually vindicated the concerns of the scientists by examining the animal feeding studies and identifying categories such as reproductive problems, immune system problems, accelerated aging, organ damage, gastrointestinal problems, and dysfunctional regulation of cholesterol and insulin in the animals in laboratories that were fed GM feed. And they said there was such clear evidence of link between the GM feed and these disruptions that they said all doctors in America should prescribe non-GMO diets to everyone. But unfortunately, both the industry and the government have turned a deaf ear on their own scientists at the FDA, on independent physicians groups, and on eminent scientists like we have on the panel tonight, Dr. Hansen and Dr. Chopra, who are both heroes of mine.
I appreciate your opening comments. Over to you, Dr. Hansen. Would you explain to us the concerns you have and others that you have spoken with or read their work who are not able to be here have concerning what are the potential risks and what are some of the adverse effects we have not been told about in the mainstream media? I understand. Oh, we just had a problem technically with him. Let's go over to Dr. Chopra. Dr. Chopra, you have been fighting a long battle in Canada with Canada Health. Explain to us what your research and the research of others that you are aware of has shown us about your concerns about genetically modified organisms, either animal or fish or in seeds.
Let me just first say, I was a regulator at Health Canada for 35 years. I did no independent research. I was a regulator. My job was to receive the required data under the law from the companies that want to sell GMO, any kind of GMO product, going into food and ultimately ending up in humans. And so the law is that no product that directly or indirectly gets into the human body shall be sold or distributed for free unless it's been demonstrated by the company to be safe and effective. And the product that I received back in 1988, it wasn't, by the way, just Monsanto. There's other companies. In this case, there was Eli Lilly, whose product that I looked at, and it was the recombinant bovine growth hormone, or RBGH. That's what I was looking at, and they had not done any, they had not presented any data. Cut the long story short, it took us 10 years to find out that actually Monsanto had done the research, and the data was sitting under, hidden under our noses by the authorities. And when the files got opened and I forced that issue, that I had written a letter to Eli Lilly back in 1988, my questions were still there. Show me that this hormone will not produce other hormones in laboratory animals. And they said it's not necessary. But then when we got the data out from our own file, from our own submissions from the Monsanto company, then I discovered, this had changed thyroid. It had effects in the thyroid. It had effects in the pancreas. It produced IGF, insulin-like growth factor 1, and it had produced effects in the testes of the rats and so forth. And, of course, they did not include female animals, so we don't know what would happen to the uterus and the ovaries, but the effect was that it was all there. Let me go to the next thing. The companies are saying that GMOs produce benefits. It produces absolutely no benefit in terms of increase either in crops or meat production. It always comes with another something. It would be a pesticide or some other something that goes with it, which, in other words, may give you the appearance of increase in food production, but actually it's pesticide that goes with it in competition with natural crops. So therefore, there's no advantage. There's every disadvantage. It's toxic. Not necessarily GMO by itself, although that's been shown to be true too. But in this case, we've got a double whammy. You've got the GMO, you've got the pesticide to go with it, and in the case of milk, then there was pus, there was antibiotics, there was antibiotic resistance, superbugs, and all those things that came with it. And that's why, ultimately, Canadian Senate said, no, this product will not be approved in Canada. And so that's where it stays. But meanwhile, the crops have been, the latest information today is that the Canadian government will now allow a low level of contamination, 0.1% of any crop, whether it's non-GMO crops, will be allowed to get contaminated by government order. This is the kind of nonsense, corrupt system that we have in the United States and Canada, and you mentioned India, and you talked about suicide. So it's not just suicide seeds. 250,000 farmers in India have committed suicide by growing GMO cotton, and they're asking for shrouds for these people. This is the kind of world that GMOs have created.
Thank you, Dr. Chopra. And back on the line is Dr. Hansen. Dr. Hansen, you have a responsibility with your many years of work through Consumer Reports to look at the facts, to keep your own personal opinion or those of others out of it, and simply do an honest, objective evaluation. If something is safe, what is the proof? If it's effective, what is the proof? Could you give us your analysis up to this point on the safety and efficacy? And also, Dr. Chopra, I don't know if you were listening or not, when he said that there was a major controversy around the bovine hormone,
right.
And he asked a question, is there any proof that this bovine hormone will in any way impact any other hormone within the animal or human who may consume the animal's products, either the meat or the dairy? Could you address these, please?
Sure. Actually, I'll take the first question first. I know what Jeffrey was saying. My take is a little bit different. I would point out that when you look at the data, there is not enough data here for these crops to have been given approval. The standard that the FDA would use for a food additive is reasonable certainty of no harm. None of the crops can meet that standard. I should also say, would like to point out, unlike the situation in Canada and the U.S., Dr. Chopra just talked about this low-level presence that will now be permitted up in Canada and how this shows corruption in Canada and the U.S. I would just point out that I have been very active through Consumers International at the Codex Alimentarius. That's the food safety standard setting organization of the UN. It's a joint World Health Organization and Food and Agriculture Organization entity. And its standards and guidelines are actually considered trade neutral, so they actually have international legal status at WTO. And there was an 8-year sort of process to develop some kind of documents on genetic engineering or these GMOs, and I attended virtually all of the meetings of the task force, went to the working groups, and also was invited as an international expert to 2 expert consultations on how to do safe assessments of genetically engineered animals. I would point out that actually at Codex, what we were able to get through, for example, there's an annex on low-level presence, and the industry likes to distort what was actually happened at this Codex meeting because they were defeated and our side won. There's now this global document on low-level presence of supposedly unapproved GMO events. What the Codex document says is that actually any country in the world, such as the European Union, can have a zero-tolerance standard, and that will be any exporter must follow that regulation. So that means this annex gives countries WTO protection if they want to have a zero tolerance for unapproved events, which is what the European Union has. The fact that Canada and the U.S. do not have that, it's not because Codex told them that they had to do this. It's because, I guess, the industry in both of our countries, in Canada and the U.S., want to be able to contaminate traditional crops when these engineered versions are grown. I should also point out that that low-level presence document also says that the importing country must do a safety assessment, which is consistent with the Codex Plant guidelines. Those guidelines are actually strict enough that none of the products that are on the U.S. market can actually meet that standard. So even though I've been working on this issue for over 25 years, we've tried to push the FDA, the government here. There's been such a pushback from industry that we actually found it was more effective to go to the international or the global level because there are 250 member organizations of Consumers International in 115 countries, and there's also various networks that were associated with Consumers International that have helped sort of create this to be an issue in many countries of the world. So I would just point out that actually we do have a global standard which is much stricter than what is going on in the U.S. and Canada. So the problem is in our countries. It isn't at the global level. To answer your question about recombinant bovine growth hormone, Shiv was the main critic in Canada. I was one of the main critics down here. In this country, we kept it off the market. It was supposed to go on the market on December of 1990. We managed to keep it off the market for almost 4 years. The data clearly show that, at least in the animals, when you inject them with bovine growth hormone, what you're trying to do is get increased milk production. The growth hormone doesn't actually increase the milk production. The way it works is through a subsidiary or other hormone, and that's insulin-like growth factor number one. IGF-1 in humans and cattle are the exact same molecule. They're the same amino acid sequence. The data clearly show that higher levels of IGF-1 are associated with a range of cancers, particularly breast cancer, colorectal cancer, prostate cancer, lung cancer, and there's also some bone cancers as well. Cows that are injected with bovine growth hormone, since you're injecting them with a hormone, you're going to upset the whole hormonal axis. So other hormones that are in their body get elevated and cause serious health problems for the animals. In fact, the way our regulations read, this product should never have come on the market simply because there's no safe level for the animals, much less people, because the regulations, at least in the U.S., say that for animal drugs to be allowed on the market, you have to show they're safe for animals, humans, and the environment. They were not able to show that with bovine growth hormone at all, so it should not have come on the market. And luckily, we were able to get it. Shiv helped to get it banned in Canada. It was actually banned in Europe very early on, and then that ban was extended, and then there was a campaign that Consumers International did that we managed to get. This thing went through Codex, and we were able to get it blocked there. I was actually, over the objection of the U.S. and Monsanto, was invited as an international expert back in 1998, which was when the Joint Expert Committee on Food Additives of WHO looked at this question for a second time. We have actually been able to block any kind of standard at Codex, and the reason that's important is because if a standard passes through Codex, then it's considered trade neutral, and you can start to bring trade challenges against other countries. I'll just point out that in the U.S., and I believe in Canada, they allow steroid hormones to be used in beef cattle. This is outlawed in the European Union, and the U.S. brought a trade challenge against Europe over the use of these beef hormones, and the U.S. sort of won this challenge. The only way they were able to do that was they actually managed to get the steroid hormones through Codex, and then once they were accepted at Codex, they could turn around and sue the European Union. So the fact that bovine growth hormone has been blocked at from being adopted at Codex since 1997 means that the U.S. has not been able to threaten other countries. And I should say, in the meantime, for bovine growth hormone, the market has sort of worked in that many many dairy businesses in the U.S. have gone RBGH-free. What should also be pointed out, because there's been actually a big win with bovine growth hormone just in the last week. 2 years ago, the state of Ohio passed regulations that would make it illegal for somebody to put on their milk that it's RBGH-free or contains no artificial growth hormones. The law in Ohio, or the regulations in Ohio, said that that would be a false and misleading label. That law was challenged by the Organic Trade Association and by the International Dairy Foods Association. They originally lost their court challenge of the Ohio rule. It was then appealed to the district court, and I actually went to the district court to the mediation session, and the district court ultimately overturned the lower court decision and basically said, yes, there are differences between milk from treated and untreated animals, and you should be able to say that on a label. This court decision was about 2 years ago, and what's been happening in the meantime is that the state of Ohio was supposed to implement regulations, meet with the other side, and come up with a stripped-down version of their regulations which could meet the law. And which could meet this court decision. Well, what happened, sort of ironically, is a week ago Monday, in the morning, Ohio completely capitulated. That is, they admitted they were wrong, and they pulled the regulation completely off the table. So that means people can go back that sell dairy products in Ohio. They can go back to the way things were, and they can label their products as RBGH-free. They don't necessarily have to follow all these arcane labeling rules. And I should point out, then what happened a couple hours later, which was even better from my mind, is there was a false farmers front group that was created in 2007 called AFACT. That's American Farmers for the Advancement and Conservation of Technology. This was a front group that Monsanto set up because in 2007, Monsanto tried to get the FDA to go after companies that were labeling their milk as RBGH-free, and basically FDA said, no, we're not going to do that. We don't consider those labels to be false and misleading. So in response, Monsanto, through all this funding, they set up this farm group in September of 2007, which played a role in first the state of Pennsylvania and then about eight or nine other states tried to pass regulations or laws that would basically stop the labeling of milk as RBGH-free. And
let me just ask you a question just for my information. Monsanto no longer owns the BGH thing. Haven't they sold it to Eli Lilly now?
Yes, what they did is, Shiv, they this was sold to Eli Lilly, and actually it's sort of ironic. It was sold in August of 2008. And the reason that that Lilly bought it was all the international distribution of bovine growth hormone, even when Monsanto was making it, so that means the sales in Mexico and in Brazil, those are all handled by Elanco or Eli Lilly already.
No, I quite understand that.
Eli Lilly bought it because what they were concerned with is China had announced that they were going to increase milk consumption tenfold in China, which would make China the largest dairy market in the world. That's why Eli Lilly paid $300 million for this in the summer of 2008. But then what happened is the melamine scandal happened in China, and so nobody wants to go near any Chinese dairy products. So they basically bought a white elephant, which hasn't performed that well. But to finish my story, this farmer front group AFACT, on last Monday, literally hours after the capitulation happened in Ohio, we have a deep throat, and the final newsletter has come out. AFACT is going out of business. They were set up to actually fight on this RBGH thing rather than admit that they've been a complete failure, because we've been able to block them with large grassroots action in all the states where they tried to get these regulations passed. They were defeated in all of them, and AFACT is now going out of business and will cease to exist as of December 31st of this year. So right. I think that's sort
the
of
the reason
wonderful.
I asked that question, Gary, was that it Monsanto has the worst name, but they're not the only evil company. There's Eli Lilly, there's BASF, there's DuPont, there's all these companies all going for GMOs. They're just waiting to contaminate
right.
the whole world's food supply. So, you know, people keep talking about only Monsanto. To be fair to Monsanto, they're not alone.
Right.
All these companies are together, and the governments are part of the corruption.
Okay, Dr. Chopra, what I want to do is, and thank you for that extended and very in-depth answer, Dr. Hansen. I appreciate it. I'm going to do a different approach, a different question for each one in this next round, and we're going to start back with Jeffrey Smith. Jeffrey, I'm going to give you a large overarching series of issues, and whichever one of those on the scale of this arch you feel are most important, please address first, all right?
Yes.
I'm very concerned that the companies and DuPont and Monsanto are highly litigious. And initially, and for a number of years, if someone's farm, including organic farm, happened to have gotten some of the seeds from Monsanto's genetically engineered crop, like a rapeseed or canola seed, on their soil, they could get sued and were. And Monsanto was really lording over a lot of farmers, creating a fear and loathing. Unfortunately, the mainstream media didn't cover much of this. I think that's important to show the economic and highly litigious nature of some of these companies. Secondly, if they have nothing to fear, why not just label genetically engineered food or genetically engineered free food? A simple process. Thirdly, if they claim that their foods are safe, then why not allow a group of independent, non-affiliated scientists to review all of their research, including many of the studies they've done, which have ended up having some very, very negative effects, and those are selectively withheld. So what they provide the government, what they provide the media, are only those studies which have been cherry-picked to give them some nice look. And finally on this, right now, there is a growing consciousness that if we don't start paying attention to our food supply, based upon the current laws that Monsanto's and some of the other DuPonts and companies have helped pass, who are in the genetic engineering business, the USDA is going to come down on their side, and as a certified organic farmer myself, the rules would be make it financially prohibitive for us if we were to do over $500,000 or more a year, to buy the equipment to process based upon their standards. So clearly this is meant to have an impact upon the public's right and access to really small, sustainable, organic farm goods. So could you address these issues? Then from there, I'm going to go over to Dr. Chopra, and I'm going to ask you about the Fox reporters who broke a story on the bovine growth hormone, and I know that both you and Dr. Hansen were quoted in part of that, but how the backlash came when Fox Network went against them, and hence the consequences of keeping this information out. My second question for you, Dr. Chopra, would be if these companies that are making genetically engineered materials, if these companies are so confident that their products are safe, then why have we had so much problems such as in India with over 250,000 farmers committing suicide? We need a more in-depth analysis of that. And I was down in Washington 3 weeks ago at the final 316-mile march from Prospect Park to Washington, where Vandana Shiva was speaking on this very issue. But we need, the rest of the public need to know, why would a farmer commit suicide? Why would the farmer drink pesticides? What is going on? The average American is unaware of what goes on in India with farmers, and how this is connected to the entire effort to get genetically engineered cotton and other crops. Right now it's eggplant, but other crops into India. And then I'll save my other questions for Dr. Hansen when we get to him. So let us begin with you, Jeffrey Smith, on the issues I've raised, please.
Thank you. The biotech industry claims they cannot afford to pay for the type of research that's conducted on drugs in order to approve their food. They say their margins in the food are not sufficient to justify that. Therefore, they have to convince all the regulatory bodies that just a few very short-term studies are necessary. In fact, the FDA doesn't require any studies whatsoever, but other countries do. Now, the research that they conduct is largely tobacco science. It's largely designed to avoid finding problems. We've got bad science down to a science. We have caught them red-handed using the wrong controls, diluted samples, overcooked samples, the wrong statistical methods, leaving out essential data. And they've gotten away with it because oftentimes the regulatory agencies around the world that approve GMOs are made up of people that are already vetted and shown to be pro-biotech and often have financial ties with the industry. Now, because food is not like drugs and is not allowed to have side effects if they're genetically engineered, if even some small side effect is identified, that could blow the cover on the whole GMO issue because it's not supposed to be dangerous. And so when, through lawsuits, for example, an independent team in France was able to recover the raw data from Monsanto, who said that the rats were not affected by their corn, the French team said, in fact, there were signs of toxicity that were clear in all three studies. So the biotech industry has worked very hard to prevent independent studies. They withhold patented seeds and crops from investigation, and when individuals discover problems, they're often pounced upon, often fired, stripped of responsibilities, forced out. And the career of Shiv Chopra is one example of the kind of pressure that comes to bear when independent or independently minded scientists start to do real research on these GMOs. Now, the reason why they're not labeled is because the FDA is mandated to promote biotechnology. In fact, a former commissioner was giving a PowerPoint presentation to the dairy industry and showed one of the goals of the FDA, main goal, was to promote biotechnology. And so they ignore the desires of 9 out of 10 Americans who want GMOs labeled in order to promote the economic interests of 5 biotech companies that now have GM crops on the market. They promote it because they know that 53% of Americans, in at least 2 polls, say they would avoid GMOs if they were labeled. And that means that they would be eliminated from the market completely because no company in their right mind would withstand a dropping of market share like that simply to use a GM crop that has no consumer benefit. Now, your point about the contamination is very, very important. We know the story of Percy Schmeisser, who's a canola farmer in Canada, whose field was contaminated with Monsanto's variety. He had been saving seeds for over 50 years and getting the very best seeds. And one would think that a contamination by Monsanto's variety onto his land would ruin his crop, and therefore he could sue Monsanto, but the opposite happened. Monsanto sued him because he had, like he did every year before, harvest his seeds and replant them, which violates the patent. And the Supreme Court of Canada agreed. Now, Monsanto has an industry of suing farmers. They've sued, you know, hundreds of farmers or have threatened hundreds of farmers and made tens of millions and, in fact, hundreds of millions as a result of this industry of suing farmers. And what this does is it creates a community, a consciousness of fear among farmers, many of whom hate Monsanto but are unwilling to not plant Monsanto seeds because of the fear of the lawsuits. So they use heavy-handedness and lawsuits as one way to control, and the way they do it is when farmers buy the GMOs, they sign a contract saying that they will not replant it. And so this is a way that they force farmers to buy seeds year after year to enrich the pockets of the seed companies. Of course, Monsanto is the world's largest seed company. Now, as far as the USDA goes, I think it's clear that the USDA is marching lockstep with Monsanto at this point. In fact, on July 1st, they had a ruling about Roundup Ready Kentucky Bluegrass, which said, we do not even have to review this new GM crop before it goes on the market, which means it can be unreviewed by any aspect of the U.S. government. This opens the key to literally thousands, perhaps, of varieties of GMOs being put onto the market with no government oversight whatsoever. It was clear from the appointment of Tom Vilsack, the former governor of Iowa, where I live. He was the biotech governor of the year in 2001. He's obviously one that works closely with the biotech industry and has proven that in his approvals of genetically modified alfalfa, sugar beets, and ethanol corn, GM corn that works best for ethanol. So as far as the organic farmers go at risk, we're in a situation now where the organic farmers and the non-GMO farmers have to pay extra for the buffer zones, for the segregation, for the testing, and for the oftentimes contaminated varieties that can cost huge amounts to an entire industry. So this is one of the gravest concerns about GMOs, that is the self-propagating genetic pollution of the gene pool, which can outlast the effects of global warming and nuclear waste, and for which there is no coexistence that can actually segregate and keep segregated these GMOs. So it's a very, very serious issue for the environment and also ultimately for the health of the planet.
I appreciate that insight, Jeffrey. Dr. Chopra, please address... Yes. Why so many suicides? What role did the genetic engineering of foods or crops in India play? And what has been the response of the government in India and of the people in India on just this assessment?
You asked me another question before this one. I'll very quickly go over that. Fox News reporters like them. I mean, that means corruption in the media as well. Because if they don't get paid and then Monsanto threatened them and then they canceled the program, the rest of the story is commonly known. Likewise, Monsanto, Eli Lilly, all these companies got me fired from Health Canada in 2004, and I still stay fired, and this matter will go on probably for another 8 years. By that time, I'll be 84. That's what they're hoping for, that I would die and the issue will die. The issue does not die. There is silver lining on this media thing that in on the 24th of this month, the Canadian journalists for free expression have decided to give me an integrity award. And so there is that silver lining. Now, going to India, I've been going to India since for the last many years, traveling all over India, NGOs inviting me, and they brought me into deep into the battle on BT or GMO eggplant. Here, you have two now. There's, after all, no GMO, as I said before, works to increase anything without pesticides. And Monsanto has this Roundup, which is a bacterial poison, bacterial antibiotic, and genetically introduced into what's called Roundup. And then that stopped to work. And then they said, okay, we'll add another one. So now this is from another bacteria called BT, Bacillus thuringiensis. Now you have two. And they're lying. They're saying you will use less pesticide. In fact, now you have two pesticides. And the farmers have to have inputs. They already are putting in chemical fertilizers, and then over on top, pesticides, one, two, and then they have to buy the seeds over on top. And when they don't recover money, whether it's from cotton or eggplant, why eggplant? Eggplant is like milk. They would take the most innocuous vegetable that most people don't even like, and then thousands of varieties, and that's when they again wanted to contaminate. Fortunately, it was not approved. There's a moratorium, continuing moratorium on it. But there's huge corruption in India, in the higher up circles, just like we have in Canada and we have in the United States. And these are regulatory bodies. In the regulatory bodies, including the universities, you've got corrupt people who are bought out. And they are going back and forth. That's how the Indian committee had approved until the people started to scream. And now this matter, ultimately, that's why the farmers are committing suicide, because they cannot sustain the input costs and they don't make any profit. And so ultimately, they drink the same pesticide and kill themselves. But again, the silver lining is this. I think, in my personal opinion, the battle over GMOs is going to be fought and lost or won in India. That is the country to watch now, because democracy in India, unlike here, works by people. When people can stop governments, people here, we work by litigation. Whoever has more money wins and so forth. It's more decent or indecent the way our democracies run here. But in India, when people get mad, then they hit the streets. Then everything will stop. I see this whole fight going in that direction now, because every day all those Vandana Shiva and dozens of other NGOs are working on that issue. So I think, once again, I haven't lost hope. I think we are moving in that direction very rapidly. GMOs, if people, and the Americans have demonstrated that, the only country, major country, industrialized country that has approved BGH is the United States. And the BGH has failed and people are not using it now. And that's why the company Monsanto has sold it to their old original competitor and they're not going to succeed. If people decide, labeled and unlabeled, they're not going to, they're going to grow their own food and locally. And by the way, I don't even like the word organic. It should be natural. The opposite of organic is inorganic. There's no such thing as inorganic food. Organic is a cycle, natural cycle. So food that Gary, you, I, and everybody else want to grow is should be natural food, grown locally, eaten locally, and it should be getting into our whole education system, revise the whole system, grow food on playgrounds and schools. It should become part of the curriculum to raise food. And so why do we have to import food from India and China? And so that's what the GMO companies want to do. They're buying up land in Sudan and Africa and contract farming in India and buy land in Pakistan. And in this, even the Indian corporations are now taking part. So therefore, this is the rich versus the poor all over the world. It's a global war that is emerging, and I think the people will win.
I appreciate your insights, Dr. Chopra. Dr. Hansen, I have three interlocking questions for you. The first has to do with common sense and reason. When the very first genetically engineered material was being offered out, they were talking about how it would be protected. There would be very specific areas set aside. And my first question when that happened was, well, what happens if there's a tornado, a hurricane, a flooding? And they said, well, that wouldn't be possible because these would be removed. We now know that upwards of 70% of some crops grown in the United States, possibly higher, corn, wheat, soy, can be genetically engineered. Well, then what protects us from any given experimental genetically engineered crop if it's out there and there is some form of natural disaster? Where does that go? It goes in the water, goes in the air, goes in someone else's plot. Once that's out of the bag, you can't put that back in again. But then we don't hear about it as if there is no consequence. And hence, we suspend logic and reason about no cause and effect when it comes to genetic engineering. That's my first question for you. Second is, the FDA is supposed to be there to protect the public. There was a Dr. Wiley who was very conscientious about that. But then again, he went after certain industries and he was thrown out, forced to resign. I'm interested in your perspective about why we even tolerate the politicalization of any agency of government. And yet it has happened time and again. Nuclear Regulatory Agency, as an example, or the Securities and Exchange Commission. But the USDA and the FDA have a long history of having people from an industry go in and head up different divisions or the entire industry and then go back into those very companies or industry positions they came from. Why should we even tolerate that? And doesn't it open it up to a conflict of interest where real science and objective science is put aside for proprietary science? And my final question is, when you look at what is happening, why has not the mainstream media been more diligent in doing its own homework instead of first going to one of the official spokespersons for the industry itself or the government and using that as the standard of truth? And therefore, anyone, Jeffrey Smith, Vandana Shiva, Dr. Chopra, yourself, have to fight this uphill battle to prove that your point has validity when it's balanced against the overwhelming power of an authority of an official word, even if those official sources have repeatedly in the past been wrong or even lied. And still now in this case, they're taken at full heart and full value without being challenged. Those are my thoughts. Would you please address them?
Yeah, actually, for your first question, I would point out it's there isn't any engineered wheat, but the data show for corn, for soy, it's over 90%. Cotton is about 90%. Corn is a little over 80%. So they're engineered at those are the main crops that are engineered at the moment. The issue you raised of if there are experimental plots during the sort of pre-sales phase, yes, there can be environmental and other accidents which can lead to genes getting out, as it were. There was a study done by the Union of Concerned Scientists called First the Seed, and they bought conventional varieties of corn, canola, and soybeans, because those were engineered, and these are non-GM versions. And when they looked, they actually found that virtually all the conventional varieties are contaminated at a low level with the engineered counterparts. So the issue of contamination is a serious one. It was particularly serious with plants that have been engineered to be drug factories, because there actually was a case of tobacco that was engineered with in one of these given drug trials in Kentucky when a tornado came through and destroyed the plot, and things were blown who knows where. So yes, that is an issue. The only thing I can say that looks good on that front is, at least on the drug plant front, even though there have been over almost 100 field trials, there actually has been nothing commercialized, and most of the companies that were working in that area have pulled back. As for your second question of why does the FDA tolerate the political interference, I would point out that actually if you look historically, there have been a lot of very good people within the FDA that have tried to fight the good fight. I would point out back in the 1980s when it was the FDA themselves that were that wanted to actually look at the safety of all the drugs that were on the market, saying that 80% of them had not gone through adequate safety testing. And what the FDA wanted to do is they wanted to do what EPA was saying they were going to do, which was relook at the safety of pesticides. That happened in 1972 with the EPA. When the FDA tried to do that, and it was FDA officials that basically said, we can't demonstrate these things are safe, we need to look at their safety again, it was the Congress that basically said, no, you can't do that, and it was because of lobbying from the industry. I think what happened is during the Reagan administration, when they tried to say that government is bad and evil, they systematically went in and tried to purge the agencies of, because many scientists and people that worked for the government, they were not making as much money as they could in the private sector. The reason that they went to work at the FDA or elsewhere was because they wanted to do work in the public interest and actually try to help people. When Reagan comes in and government is considered bad, then that's when you have the politicization happening more and more with trying to figure out ways that they can gut the agency. So there's been this whole long campaign in the U.S. that started in the Reagan era and that has actually been funded in part by the Koch brothers to basically get to a deregulatory, to starve government as much as possible so that they can get rid of these pesky regulations. So I would just point out that there are good people in these government agencies, and they're often being hamstrung by sort of the more pro-industry sources. So that's a fight that I think needs to be taken on at the government level. There's things we can do on the outside. As for why the mainstream media hasn't covered this as well, I look back and a few years ago, it was primarily Monsanto's doing. Part of the reason that people have focused on Monsanto, yes, there are a number of other countries involved in the GE fight here, but up until about 5 years ago, 90% of the global acreage in transgenic crops were in varieties and traits that came from Monsanto. That's why people have focused on Monsanto, because they're the lion's share of the market. Monsanto has very aggressive tactics during the 25 years ago during the BGH fights. They would go in and threaten the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, all these papers, if they were even going to publish anything that was critical. And this was actually a very serious issue. Many of the mainstream media in this country decided it's not worth trouble to risk a lawsuit or this harassment. So many of the organizations sort of buckled under. I would point out that when they went over to Europe and they tried the same tactics over there, it backfired in their faces, because when they tried to, for example, threaten the writers at The Guardian, The Guardian just looked at them and they continued to write critical things. So I think part of the reason that the mainstream media hasn't looked at this as well is because some of the harassing nature of the companies, and particularly Monsanto. And then I just quickly want to talk about the Fox News reporter case, because I was actually intimately involved with that, because I was the technical expert that actually testified in the trial, both Jane Acree and Steve Wilson's trial down there. And just very quickly, what happened is they prepared a piece on bovine growth hormone. It was set to air, and Fox News, and in fact Roger Ailes, wrote them a letter demanding all these changes. They went back and forth. They made 74 changes. That still was not good enough. They did not want them to talk about any of the they didn't want them to mention the word cancer. They didn't want them to talk about any of the adverse effects. Finally, they decided that they weren't going to air that piece. They were fired. They sued Fox. And what was interesting is Jane Acree actually won her case, and the judge said this is just about wrongful dismissal. It has nothing to do when he instructed the jury, he said this has nothing to do with the safety or not of RBGH. But since I was the person that testified on that issue, on the safety issue, what's interesting is in Florida, which is where this lawsuit happened, it turns out that besides being asked questions by the lawyers, the jurors get to ask questions as well. So I was actually asked 10 questions by the jurors, and they were very good ones. And in fact, when the decision came down, the jurors found for Jane Acree, because they said that she was being pressured to produce a false and misleading documentary, which means, I should say a false and misleading story, which means, of course, that they had listened to what I had told them about the problems with bovine growth hormone. But her case, this case, even though they won it in a court, what happened is when it went to the appeals level, the court decision was overturned. Why? Because it turns out that the FTC doesn't have a requirement that against putting false or misleading news on the air. And so, therefore, that's why that case got actually thrown out. So I would say part of the reason that for the mainstream media not covering this is because of a lot of the pressure from the countries. I would also finally like to agree with Shiv, because I do think India is going to be a key place for this fight. I've been involved in that fight as well, and I would point out that actually there's an International People's Permanent Tribunal which are putting the six major transnationals that are responsible for genetic engineering. They're being put on trial in Bangalore, December 3rd to 6th, this International People's Permanent Tribunal, saying that they're violating human rights through the use of these genetically engineered crops, and I'm going to be one of the expert witnesses at that tribunal.
Well, we're out of time, but thank you very much, Dr. Michael Hansen, Dr. Sheev Chopra, and Jeffrey Smith for your input. It's been enlightening. Let us hope that going forward we will do so with new information, including a just-completed Rodell Institute farming systems trial, 30 years side-by-side growing organics and conventional crops, showing many advantages to the naturally grown, outperforming the GMOs in droughts, soil sustainability, equal and better yields, less energy and less greenhouse gases, and higher profits. And the recent release of info in a federal lawsuit against the Fish and Wildlife Services for having GMO crops grown in 54 national wildlife refuges in the Middle West, and the USDA's $500,000 grant, taxpayer dollars, to help push Aqua Bounty's genetically modified salmon. FDA earlier could not conclude that it was safe in order to approve. So there are good things happening. I thank all of you for helping lead this movement for all of us. All the best.
Thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you very much for listening. We look forward to sharing more on our next program. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother,
this is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
I can dig it.
Stop.